What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 87, Nutrition Updates for the Physically Active. The first part of what you're going to hear today is the lecture that Roberta Anding gave to the Sports Medicine Update, and then the second part will be the interview that Dr. Mark Knoblach did with Roberta Anding. So this is all part of the Sports Medicine Update brought to you by Memorial Hermann. And again, we want to extend our thank you to them for allowing us to record all the guests there and to do all the interviews there. And of course, you can check us out on iTunes, the website sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. And we're looking to increase that activity. So using hashtag TheSMB during live sessions. Starting up maybe in July, maybe in August. We'll be starting up with the live sessions. So look for those on Twitter. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. So for Jeremy Jackson and all the other sports medicine people there at Pasadena High School, thanks for listening.
Really have to ask and set the stage, who are we talking to? And since many of y'all are going to take care of younger kids and teens versus college and professional athletes, I think there's some real important differences. When you talk about kids in school, and I'm all over the city of Houston, I have to tell you there's nothing uniform about HISD or Spring Branch in terms of the way they allow kids to eat or school. School challenges are pretty significant. Some of the HISD inner city schools don't let kids bring in water bottles, for example, because some of the kids in their kind of wise guy way ended up putting Everclear in their water bottle, and that's not really what the school was going for. They're concrete thinkers, which means you say don't drink soda, and that's what you get. You didn't say fruit punch, you didn't say lemonade, you didn't say sweet tea. So you say, I don't want you drinking Coke anymore, and that's exactly what you get. So part of the normal developmental path of adolescence is to go from a concrete to an abstract thinker. The challenge is that's not 100% guaranteed, and about 25% of adults can't abstract. These are the people that say, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. They don't want the science, they don't want the rationale, they just want to tell me what I need to do. And so that really determines how you're going to educate someone. Teens are interested in supplements, and oftentimes make some really poor decisions on that. And I know Brett this afternoon is going to be talking about how to gain lean weight, but puberty is the ultimate arbitrator. And if you've got someone from a developmental standpoint, physiological developmental standpoint, who's a 10 or 3, that guy can get stronger, and on the outside, what that would look like is someone who's getting some facial hair, the voice is starting to change. That person can get stronger, they're not going to get bulky. And so when you've got someone who is 15, where they are in development, physiological development, is going to determine whether or not they can develop muscular hypertrophy. These are the kids, honestly, that are much more likely to use anabolic steroids, the late bloomers. So if you ever saw pictures of LeBron James when he was 15 years old, pardon my language, he's a grown-ass man. He was a grown-up at 15, where you take some other 15-year-olds that really are very physiologically immature and they're very frustrated with not being able to get big in the weight room, and it's because they can't. I don't care how good your strength coach is, not that makes any difference to me. You can't change God's rules or Mother Nature's rules. So without androgens, the muscles can get stronger, they just can't get bigger. And you have to consider all this when you're planning programs for kids and adolescents. When you get to the college level, and I'm very blessed to be able to be the course at Digital Rice University, I would say I'm fortunate enough that I can teach at Rice because I was never smart enough to get in Rice. I went to LSU. You get the development of abstract thinkers. So I've got some kids that run distance for Rice that are biochemistry majors that can give anybody in this room a run for their money in terms of physiology. So they're really bright, they're very good abstract thinkers. Supplements are norm. And so what I'm going to try and get us back to is we got to think about real food because it's clean, safe, and legal, theoretically. And we need to get people away from supplements for some of the reasons that we talk about. Bodies can be fully developed with the ability to increase strength and hypertrophy. I will say when Obi Okoye joined Houston Texans at 19 years old, he grew 2 inches in the years he played for us. I re-measured him about a couple of weeks ago when he came to see me, and he's grown another 2. So from the time he was drafted till now, he's grown 4 inches because he was only 19 when he came into the NFL. All right, so So let's talk about our different types of athletes. So we've got aerobic athletes, which are primarily distance runners, and I'm going to argue everybody else is going to be an anaerobic athlete. Carbohydrates matters in this group, and this is the only group that I can really hang my hat on and say, if they have inadequate carbohydrates, they're not going to do well. When I say focus on glycemic index, what that means is there are some carbohydrates that are very fast-acting, gels, goo, sports drinks, those kinds of things, and I call those rescue nutrition. So let's say you've got someone who didn't have a good breakfast and they're going to go run in their high school cross-country meeting, and they didn't have anything to eat. Well, I don't have time to give them oatmeal. I don't have time to give them scrambled eggs. I'm going to have to give them something that's going to get into those muscles quickly and get those muscles well fueled. So that's where Gatorade, Powerade, whatever is your choice, a gel or a goo. I used to, certainly on taking care of my son and his buddies over at CK, I used to carry jelly beans with me or red licorice. Because the only thing that matters when it's on, you're going to the starting line, is do you have enough food and do you have enough carbohydrates? When you got less than 30 minutes to fuel someone, protein makes no difference and could actually be a liability. So this is the one group of athletes where you can almost say if they've got dead legs and they're not performing very well, you need to go back and assess carbohydrates. Protein needs are higher than the average person needs. So you see this on published in tables all the time in a sports nutrition book, 1.2 to 1.4 grams per kilogram per day. The problem is nobody knows what that means. And the average adolescent in the state of Texas eats 1.5. So they're already over the amount of protein. So when you hear I'm a distance runner, I need more protein, it's actually true. But the question is, what are you already eating? And if you're already eating more than that, then the reality is you don't. The people I get concerned about in this type of athletic endeavor are my female distance runners. Because oftentimes they don't A, get enough calories, B, they certainly don't get enough protein. And then if you throw, oh, by the way, I'm vegetarian on top of it, now you've got something else completely different, and protein can be lacking in that population. So carbohydrates is the focus of supplementation and pregame. And I do not work with Gatorade or Powerade, but this is the group that really is going to benefit most from a sports drink because their carbohydrate needs are so high. Well, can you help advance me because I'm pressing forward and I got nothing. There we go. All right. Strength athletes, anaerobic. To me, anybody who lifts weights is going to be at some point in time a strength athlete. And when you look at strength athletes, their protein needs are going to be about twice normal. So 1.4 to 1.8 grams of protein per kilogram per day. Maintaining muscle is probably going to take a little bit less once you build up that base. The problem is protein needs to be spaced out. And you know how we are as Texans, we tend to want to eat massive amounts of meat at dinner. So you might have a 12-ounce steak and say, well, you know, I really need to have all that protein. The problem is if you started out and didn't have breakfast, or you had a bagel or cereal, so hopefully everybody got a little mini cheese to get some protein this morning when you came in. If you don't space out your protein, the reality is if you think about it, muscle and any protein-containing tissue in your body is dynamic, which means you're building and breaking down 24/7. So it really defies logic to say, well, I met my protein needs at dinner. I had a basis of meat at dinner, but I didn't do much during the day. So again, for a lot of the high schools, if they're lifting before school or they're training before school, getting some protein in first thing in the morning can be problematic. And that is my son on the bottom of that slide. You've seen him more than once. And when he went to high school, because I'm a working mom with three kids, I used to just boil on Sunday hard-boiled eggs. Peel them and have them in a bowl with plastic. So before he was going out the door, he'd eat a couple hard-boiled eggs, some fruit, maybe a smoothie, a bowl of cereal, and I didn't have to cook anything, and he still got 14 to 20 grams of protein. So getting that breakfast protein in for a lot of our high school athletes can be a real challenge, but you've got to do that. So again, when I'm thinking about the poor strength coach who is held responsible for someone getting bigger, stronger, faster, he or she can't do that, can't make something out of nothing. And if you don't have adequate calories and protein early in the day, you're not going to be able to get that muscle we die and be anaerobic. And we're going to talk about how we put together a fueling plan based on carbohydrate needs for that distance runner or anaerobic athlete. The intensity of how hard somebody's training also determines the need for protein supplementation. So if you ask anybody in the weight room who's a hard worker, most people are not going to tell you, now I'm pretty lazy, I take reps all the time. They're not going to tell you that. Oh yeah, I'm an all-out worker, and tell you what. And the minute the strength coach turns around, they're doing this, they're barely doing that bicep curl. If you're not an all-out worker in the weight room, adding protein supplementation to you is a colossal waste of time. So this is one of my favorite guys, and you can listen to him on Sports Radio 610, Seth Kane. And if you're looking at paying attention to that picture, he's on crutches. He's on crutches because he's a bolted hip. And Dan Riley, who's my awesome strength coach buddy, is doing manual resistance because he literally can't do anything when he's on crutches. He's not going to be able to power clean or squat or do any of those other kinds of Olympic lifts. So Dan's getting him a workout using the towel. And you can see based on Seth's face, this is not a wimpy workout. And only Dan Riley can do the manual resistance power workout. I don't know who else can do that. But you can tell he's working pretty hard. So his need for protein supplementation around that physical activity is greater because he's working hard. So if you have someone who's not an all-out worker and they say, should I take a whey protein shake? To me, my answer would be, not until you work hard, you haven't earned it. You haven't earned it. And unless you're working really hard in the weight room, there's no reason for you to go ahead and do that. So what do we know about how much protein a strength training athlete needs? Well, the science is pretty clear, no more than 2 grams. I'm going to give you one caveat before that. A few studies demonstrate greater needs in bodybuilders. A survey of college athletes suggested 7% didn't know how much protein they need, and a third of them estimated their need at 18.7 grams per kg, so that's 4 times what they need. So you can see for the strength trained athlete, their real focus is, am I getting enough protein? I need more protein, unless I need to get stronger. The exception to this rule, this is some really good science that comes from Sue Phillips' lab. If I have someone who is over fat, and that is the right term, if they are over fat, and they're a strength training athlete, and you're trying to cut some of that body fat before the season, they could probably go 2.5 grams of protein per kg, because as I pull back on the calories, I actually have to increase the protein a little bit. So it's the guy that's trying, or the girl, that's trying to cut body fat, their protein needs are actually higher than them. And again, please keep in mind, you need to space it out. Also from Sue Phillips' lab, is actually a very low fat protein source. Mm-hmm. All right. Help me out, guys.
Okay.
Does the type of protein matter when you have running back, Arian Foster, became vegan, the need to get some really high quality protein in him. And the studies indicate that you get improved muscle protein synthesis with milk and whey protein. So I'm going to say there's a rock star in the protein equation. It's going to be whey protein. About 50% of the protein in milk is whey. Most athletes don't know that. And the other 50% is casein. It's about 50-50 ratio. So when I'm dealing with inner city kids that have no money, I have to tell you, I think it's pretty unethical to tell them to all buy a whey protein supplement when they can get milk free. Because the minute I put it into the supplement, one, I'm risking their career. Two, people if they're really good and going to be drug tested. Two, I'm spending money on something that they can get for free in their cafeteria. Assuming they're not lactose intolerant, there's some issues if you're lactose intolerant. But the reality is, it's milk protein and it's whey protein. problem is creamy products are oftentimes not acceptable. You're not going to get too many guys coming off the soccer field saying, please can I have a glass of milk? So there are products out there that have whey protein added that are fruit-based. Gatorade Recover is probably one. Problem I have with it, it's so sweet. It's infinitely sweeter than regular Gatorade. And so for me, the sweetness is a real liability. The only way I've ever used that product successfully as a whey protein substitute is if it's ice cold or put over ice to dilute some of that sweetness out. So both the aerobic proteins, the ones that are in the mitochondria, and the coarse proteins, the muscular proteins, improve. And the driving factor here, what makes whey such a rock star, is the amino acid glutamate. So you're going to see a lot about leucine in the next 6 months or so, and people are flocking to the stores to buy leucine, and I want you to think about the best dietary source of leucine is just going to be milk. Right? So when you're trying to get that muscular hypertrophy, all athletes are going to want to get bigger, stronger, faster, with the exception of women. Women don't like that I'm going to get bulk overweight. And so for me, the reality check is there's subset of women that can get really bulky, and if they have the medical diagnosis of type 2 diabetes or PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, they can actually get muscular hypertrophy. In both of these conditions, they can have androgen excess, and so they actually make more testosterone than the average woman does, but most women are going to struggle to get bulky because we don't have that same wonderful complement of testosterone. So I see a lot of women who undercut it in the weight room because they're fearful of that. Eccentric, and this comes from the British Medical Journal, eccentric exercise appears to give the best gain. So when I have an athlete who says, I've done everything under the sun, I can't get any stronger, I'll send them back to the strength coach and say, please try to eccentrically emphasize exercise. And as you know, eccentric portion is the lowering of the weight, not the raising of the weight. So if I've got someone who's trying to develop big muscles in their hips and thighs, I may put them on, have a strength coach put them on a leg press, slow it up for 3 seconds and lower it to an 8-9. Now, as ATCs, I'd be a little bit concerned about grabbing my life is when you really have someone who's eccentrically emphasizing, but it's an exceptional way for people to get really good strength gains. Time under load is that concept. If I can make each breath a little bit longer, I tend to get better muscular gains. A couple examples of Victoria Mastow that can no longer be in Texas, but when we're looking at Alamus, when you're looking at his protein needs based on his requirements, 145 to 190 grams per day. So here's the million-dollar question. As you translate all of this into grams, can you guys translate it into food? And that becomes the disconnect. So if you tell an athlete they need 190 grams of protein per day, they're going to start reading supplement fact labels to figure out how they get 190. So let me give you a couple things to kind of keep in the back of your mind. Each ounce of meat, ounce of meat is 7 grams. Okay? So if you had an 8-ounce steak for dinner last night, you had 56 grams of protein. 56 grams. Well, that's not so bad if you need 145 to 190. Glass of milk has 8. 8-ounce glass of milk has 8. A serving of vegetables or a slice of rice. So those are going to be your big protein-containing items. So a egg is an ounce, so that's going to be in that 7-gram range. So if I gave my son hard-boiled egg, he's got 14 grams of protein, a bowl of cereal, I can add another 3. And pretty quickly, I can take these numbers and translate them into real food. And even though I'm a sports dietitian, I'd love to have you send me all your athletes, the reality is you've got to be the front line. And if you can't take these numbers and make some sense out of them and translate it into real food or in that kind of degree. Now, if you're a distance runner, you tend to be pretty petite to begin with. So our 2004 Olympic marathon winner weighed 130 pounds and needs 70 to 85 grams of protein per day. So not a whole lot. Hopefully y'all have this in your handout. This is actually to me, and I'm going to say I'm going to give some credit to some other folks to help me to develop this, but when you look at this as a table, this should be a cheat sheet in your athletic. allowed to upload a copy of it and keep it. Because when you're looking at the supplement needed, the performance support that it gives, the type of activity, now I put it into chemical terms for you, and then the dosing, it really gives you an idea of how much somebody needs. So for example, if you look at carbohydrates, it's going to fuel all types of exercise with the aerobic and anaerobic pathway. And a really great resource for y'all is the International Olympic Committee has guidelines for carbohydrates based on what type of activity. So if you're a math athlete, if you're a lineman in the NFL, you need 3 to 5 grams per kg of body weight carbohydrates. If you are a marathoner or you're doing triathlon, you could require 10 to 12 grams of carbohydrates. So we can't say all athletes need the same amount of carbohydrates. Factually not true. If you give 10 grams of carbohydrates to a lineman, you are now making him obese. Because his job is not to run. Running, something didn't go right, correct? Something didn't go right. You face with someone, it's not a good thing. Your job is to be a mountain, so their carbohydrate needs are significantly less than someone who's out there. Now, when it comes to high school track and field, using my son as a 400-meter guy, it's not his event where he needs carbohydrates. He's a pretty decent 46-second guy. He didn't need carbohydrates for the event. It was the 2 hours of training. It was going to track practice and doing repeat hundreds and 200, 600 in an afternoon, going into the weight room. That's what happens. So what ends up happening for a lot of these athletes that we take care of, it's not their event, it's not game day. It's the fact that they were slightly underfueled Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You might give them Friday off if they have to compete on Saturday. Honest to God, for many of these kids, it's not enough time. They didn't get enough recovery time. Talk to California or Chrome about recovery time and the need to have adequate amounts of recovery to make sure that those muscles are well fueled. The one that I really want to highlight, so I want to make sure I keep Bob and the rest of the group on time, are leucine and HMB. Leucine and HMB are essentially the same thing. And what they do is they prevent muscle protein breakdown. They don't really make the muscle bigger, but remember I said muscle is dynamic tissue. You're breaking down and building up. Well, if I can blunt the breakdown process, then I still end up on the positive side of the equation. So think about your injured athlete. I'm going to say I had the privilege as his mom to put my son back together 6 times, had 6 orthopedic surgeries in 6 years, and time, everyone told him it was career-ending, it was a shift, he tore his meniscus, had a cord hernia, and the goal was, because I bought a lot of them, the goal was to prevent muscle protein breakdown, so I used these two products. I used these two products because the injury response makes you collectively lose muscle, and please remember that, because oftentimes we look at scale weight and say, okay, well, he's 200 pounds, well, post-injury, he's not the same 200 pounds. Despite your best efforts, despite being the best ATC in the world, you can't change that response, but you can change what you're providing your athlete or you're recommending that they take in, and leucine and HMB are those. Certainly, creatine can help, but only people that are all-out workers. Caffeine is an awesome supplement. It's safe. Legal, and no, if you drink coffee in the morning, it doesn't dehydrate you. You can do that at the door. If you're drinking 7 cups of Starbucks, we got another issue. But you got another issue there. But the reality is, you're not going to dehydrate someone if they have a cup of coffee or a cup of coffee in the morning. You pee earlier, you don't pee more. And so, please don't promote that. So, if I have someone like my son who struggled with the first 100 and is coming out of the box, gave a little caffeine and took 0.2 seconds off the time. And if you know anything about the 400 meters, that's a pretty significant drop to get someone down 0.2 seconds. So I'm going to stop there, and certainly, I don't know where we are in the process of all time, but if you have questions or concerns, email me. That's my Twitter handle. I promise I don't post things about what I have for breakfast. I only post relevant things for health and wellness. And I think it's good. Right. All right. Any questions that I can answer real quickly? Anybody have any burning questions, sir? HMB is actually, losing this fear when your body metabolizes it, it becomes HMB. There are nutrition products out on the market that are foods, and I should have talked to this company, so I'm making them rich. Ensure muscle health contains HMB. Ensure sleep contains HMB. I love those products. One, because they're foods, and other foods because they have a nutrition factor on it, so they're not going to have a positive drug test. They are pricey. They are pricey. They're about $2 a bottle, unless you go to Amazon, and you probably get about $1.50. Absolutely love that product post-injury. So if you get have a kid who's injured, you just develop a little sheet, call mom and dad, go out and buy the product. Yes, it looks like something your grandma would drink, because it's actually designed for better protein breakdown. So I love that product. Absolutely, post-surgical. That should be the first thing that they have coming out of anesthesia. They should have that the last thing before they go to bed. Right before they go to bed. So if they're having surgery at 6 in the morning, before they go to bed, they should have some intra muscle health. When they come out of that, then that's exactly what I do with my son. He just brings an intra at midnight, an MPO after midnight, and then in the recovery, doing, oh my God, I couldn't say this last week. He was doing slow rep leg extensions, no weight, had no quad atrophy after a second meniscus tear. Ran 10 days after he had his knee broke. Had all the scars to take out, still had his incisions on the side. Rough tested out the wazoo, because everybody's thinking this kid cannot possibly run 400 meters with incisions on the inside of the knee. Roll up leg extensions, no weight, interim muscle health. And again, better living through great athletic trainers like you, great strength coaches, and hopefully some sports nutrition sprinkled on top to finish up the day. All right, thank you all very much.
All right, I am Dr. Mark Knobloch. I am a clinical coordinator with the University of Houston Master Athletic Training Program. I'm sitting here with Roberta Anding. She's just giving a great talk on sports nutrition. I'd like her to introduce herself briefly, and then we'll get the interview started.
Yeah, I'm Roberta Anding. I'm the Director of Sports Nutrition at Texas Children's, and in that role, I also take care of the Houston Astros, the Texans, the Rice Owls, and the Houston Ballet.
So, one of the things I have to ask you, general question you've probably heard 1,000 times, do athletes need to supplement or not?
Well, do athletes need to supplement? The quick answer to that is no, depending on how great their diet is. The one exception I would make is oftentimes we need to supplement the injured athletes because they're a little bit different breed than the healthy, well guy walking down the street.
And you hit a second topic I wanted to talk about is training. And you talked about leucine briefly.
Yeah.
Before we get into leucine, I really want to know, in your opinion, you see this on TV all the time, buy this product. And would you say that the trends that you see, because they're a trend, they come and go, in my opinion. Would you say, what percent, or just give your background, or your opinion, what percent of trends actually work? Because these athletes will come to us as athletic trainers all the time. Say, I saw this on TV. And my friend took this and he lost weight. My friend gained 50 pounds of muscle by taking a supplement. What is your opinion on trending? You see, a lot of it's advertising, but could you just briefly talk about that?
I think only about 25% of the things that become trends actually have some clinical science behind them, and that's the real challenge. So, for example, people can use oxygenated water. Well, there is no such thing as oxygenated water. Oxygen's a gas. You really can't do that. And so people will buy very expensive equipment in their house, may drink more water, but the reality is it's not improving performance because it's oxygenated. So I think there's lots of things out there like that. And the science, if you look at it online, almost seems too good to be true, and that really should be a red flag for us. The stuff that does work, and I do think there's some good science behind leucine, as you mentioned, I think there's also some fabulous science behind beetroot juice and probably a few others like watermelon juice and pomegranate concentrates are coming down the pike that actually do appear to improve athletic performance. So the hard thing for today's athlete is they have to rely on their ATC, hopefully their sports dietitian and their strength coach, to get the evidence-based stuff and stay away from the stuff that's being sold at the health food stores.
And how do you, you know, you're science-based, and I now love research. I hated it when I was a clinician, but how do you tell an athletic trainer to how do you help them differentiate when these kids bring this, or their parents call them and say, you know, like you mentioned something about And sure, we'll get to that in a minute, but they call you and they say this. How do you handle the parents or the athletes that don't have a science background without just saying, no, that's wrong? Because you're going to get into, I think you get into a head-to-head, headbutting contest.
Yep.
Well, it is right. No, it's really not. How do you approach that?
I think that's an excellent question, because your goal is to keep that athlete and their parents in the athletic loop. You want them coming to you. So I kind of look at this and say, if it isn't going to hurt you, if there's nothing in there that I know is going to hurt you, but the science doesn't prove that it works, to me it's a wash. And if you want to spend your money on something like that, as long as you're getting a clean product, which I think is pretty important, NSF certified or Informed Choice for Sports certified, then I'm going to let it go. But the stuff that is known to cause harm, like OxyElite Pro and Jack 3D, the answer is no, and here's the reason no. Because they're dangerous, they cause liver failure, there's lots of problems with those supplements. But the ones that kind of are in that gray zone, as long as they're not going to hurt you, I'll probably let that one go.
And something else you hinted on, and I thought it was a great topic, is you have inner city kids that can't afford supplements. So what do you see, for example, you have the supplement or you have the product, you have the actual natural products such as milk. Do you supplement the whey protein or do you drink milk? Do you see a difference in that? Obviously the supplement is more concentrated, but some supplements, whatever your body doesn't need, it gets rid of. So do you recommend, or is there a difference? Let's say you have athlete one that can't afford it and you have athlete B that cannot afford it. Will you expect to see a difference in performance or healing, whatever, or do you think there really is a difference, or they just say go?
I don't think there is a difference, because if I can get someone to improve the quality of their food, and improve doesn't mean you're eating all organic and that you're steam cooking all your vegetables. It's, do you have a good sports nutrition plan as a base? Again, Stu Phillips did some really great science on whey protein, the isolate, and compared it to fat-free fluid milk, and there really was no difference. I think the synergy of real food components, so say, for example, you have milk and berries together, is really more beneficial to you in the long run as a human and as an athlete than getting the resveratrol from a supplement and the whey from a supplement. So being a sports dietitian, I'm a real food person first, because I think that synergy of real gorgeous food on the plate is infinitely better than potions and pills.
And I'm going to save my next question to you when you said you're a real food person. But my first question is, can you just talk briefly about regulation of supplements?
They're not.
They're not. And so what does an athlete need to know about that?
Yeah, they're not. And so I think the world, and of course, taking care of athletes, I consider myself an advocate for them, and I'm on the NFL Supplement Committee. I think that the challenge is when companies lie, the athlete is held out there as a cheater if they test positive. You know, they're sticking a needle in their behind, when most of the time, in my experience, it's not that. There's always going to be a handful of people who knowingly dope, and what can you do? You're not going to fix that. But for a lot of people who test positive, it has really nothing to do with them intending to dope. It's dietary supplements. And it is true in the NFL and the NCAA and every governing body, you and you alone are responsible for what goes in your body. But what do we do when the company lies? StarCaps is a great example of a company that lied. They put in a banned diuretic. Six NFL players tested positive. One guy who played for the Houston Texans was cut because of his unique position, and he never played another down in the NFL. That was the end of his career. He was a great position player and ended up losing his career over a dietary supplement. So I think the challenge is with dietary supplements, because there is no oversight, and I know the manufacturers will take me to task on this, but I've just seen too many companies, too many products that are out there that cause significant harm and danger, that we need to look at that industry a little bit differently. So to me, you can get these apps for your phone, NSF Certified for Sport, so it's Nancy Sam Frank, NSF Certified for Sport, or Informed Choice for Sport. You can look up your product, and if it's not on that list, I would tell an athlete, don't take it. You're risking your career, and again, depending on where you go to college and depending on how good your teams are, you will be drug tested, and you would hate to see someone lose a scholarship because of a company that didn't tell the truth.
And you can't tell them, you can't say, sorry, I didn't know it was on.
No, you can't.
But like,
no.
Yeah, like you said, there's good and bad companies. The problem is the 1%ers or the 5%ers ruin it for everybody else.
Everybody else, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So what do you tell you brought this up in your talk too. Well, you mentioned it, but what do you tell the athlete that, you know, you said go to GNC or get something that, you know, you think might be regulators from a recommended company, and they say, well, I can get it on Amazon for half price from this company. How do you respond to that?
And you've seen the expose on Amazon in the last 72 hours where people can buy prescription drugs without a doctor's prescription on Amazon. So to me, the answer is no, unless it's an NSF certified product. And you know, when you're a high school or a collegiate athlete and you've invested all of this time, 30 hours a week, do you really want to throw it away based on one egregious error? And again, nobody cuts you any slack because of that. And
saving $10 costs you a career.
Costs you a career, absolutely.
Now, something that you hit on, you mentioned briefly, and I said it's interesting to me, is you said you're a natural food.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle these athletes? And again, I think it's a trend, in my opinion, that you know, you can talk about these diet trends. I'm gluten-free now.
Yeah.
obviously it's a performance issue, but are diets okay, or do you, you know, does, when they're doing it for, and I love this, Jimmy Kimmel did a great piece on
gluten-free.
He asked gluten-free people, what is gluten? They had no idea.
Some of them,
obviously, I'm sure he didn't show everybody that did know, but there was a lot of people that didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so these trends come out, and my friend's doing it, or the paleo diet, or the gluten-free, or whatever. What do you say, and which diets are okay? Which do you recommend they stay away from as a performing athlete?
Well, gluten-free, and I think you hit the nail on the head. If you have celiac disease, chances are you know it, or you've got a lot of GI symptoms that would lead you to a gastroenterologist. And so the people who, and I have a distance runner who's phenomenal, who really does have celiac disease, very brilliant. She knows exactly how to manage it. She eats gluten. She'd be unbelievably ill. Then there's these people who have gluten sensitivity, where they feel sort of nauseated, sick to their stomach, some non-specific symptoms, that they go off gluten and they feel better. That doesn't mean that just because it's gluten-free, it's good for you. A gluten-free donut is still a donut, so it falls into that category of crappy food. So just because I make it gluten-free, and I think that's, to me, as you talk about diet trends and how consumers are sucked in, is they'll take a word that no one really knows. Gluten's been in food forever, and they don't really know that term. And so the minute I say gluten-free, it's something else. So if you want to be a multi-gazillionaire, take a food ingredient, label it the something-free diet,
I've said that very same thing.
And now you're good to go. With paleo, I think there's some differences there. And on the paleo diet, you can actually get carbohydrate from fruits and vegetables, although less. So I do think for some individuals, like I mentioned in my talk, that lineman that is 300 pounds and really is not that aerobic athlete, putting him on a lower carbohydrate diet isn't going to hurt him. If I took that same football team and put a wide receiver on that diet, the chances are he is going to run out of gas because there's not enough carbohydrate. So unfortunately, in the trendy world, carbohydrate is damned as the evil demon. And too much of anything is going to make you sick. Too much of anything can make you fat. So I think the challenge is to try and educate people. And again, to me, it's this first do no harm. If it isn't going to hurt them to do it, then I'll show them how to navigate, particularly over at the Texans and the Astros. I'll show them how to navigate our cafeteria to get that done. But if it's going to hurt them, or it's a cleanse, or something else that's basically, I don't know, something that's going to cause diarrhea.
Caloric
restriction. Then my job is to make sure that if they choose to go down that path, that they know what the consequence is. So certainly with you in the athletic training world, me in the sports nutrition world, you can't make somebody do something, but our job is to be the consummate educators and stay on top of the science and not the hype and the trends.
Now, being that you've worked high school, college, and pro, do you see, in terms of compliance, do you see athletes as being more compliant than, say, somebody that needs to go on a low cholesterol diet because they're obese or whatever? Or do you see athletes as more of, I'm only here because I was told to come talk to you, but I'm going to do, or are they really innately tuned into their, or is it that big a deal? And I'm sure there's variation, obviously, but what do you see, or do you see high school athletes as more compliant and pros as more, what do you see in terms of
I think it's a personality thing. I think the higher up the pecking order that you get, I think there's more suspicion because everybody wants something from you. So if you're that premier running back for pick your team, you've been approached by a gazillion different people. So there's a different level of cynicism. And my response, whether it's Rice or the Astros or the Texans, I would say I work for the player, and my job is to make them better. And if they're a little suspicious of me, it's my responsibility to earn their trust in some way, shape, or form.
Become an expert.
And that's my job, whether it's doing a body comp for them or whether it's helping them when they've had a wisdom tooth pulled and they don't know anybody to go to the grocery store for them. It's my job to build that trust. And I think when the trust is there, I think athletes are much more likely to have you, you know, as their resource. So without naming names, I've done that. I've gone to the grocery store for guys that are sick and don't have any family in town. I've worked with their wives. I've worked with their girlfriends to help improve the quality of the food that they're being served at home. And I've helped players who have sick kids get resources in Houston. So it's kind of being that contact person for health and wellness in these organizations that I think ultimately gets the trust. And the climate's changed. I can say my first year at the Texans in 2002, when I took away the fried chicken and the cookies, I thought I was going to get my tire slashed. I said, don't tell anybody I drive a Tahoe. Don't let anybody know, because I didn't want anyone to know, because I was, honestly, the players were pretty upset with me. Now I'm being asked for brown rice, and can we have quinoa, and what about edamame? And I'm going, the tide has turned.
Took
in the
10
last,
years,
yeah,
but it clicked.
It's all right.
Finally,
it's all right.
So something that, you know, I don't want to wrap this up, but something that really stuck out to me, and I thought this was funny, I laughed out loud when you said it, is you gave your son jelly beans before a race.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I went to school, and I went, you know, I did the athletic training hours and the carbo classes in the mid-90s, and we were told, don't ever give simple sugars because it'll be a crash.
Yeah.
And you said you gave your son, now he's a sprinter and he's anaerobic, obviously, but what is your, just can you talk about that just briefly about,
because I think that's
somebody's
point.
Even said, don't give him Gatorade right before, because if you give him one cup, it'll burn off and it'll crash. But
it depends on their leanness, and in my experience, if I've got someone who's, and I have a bod pod, so I only can use my bod pod numbers, if I get guys that are below 5% body fat, I actually think that's true. I think they do crash, and so I think if you're that ultra-elite marathoner, I don't think you can maintain your blood sugars with a very high glycemic index carb, and that's what Gatorade or jelly beans would be. And so for those athletes, if I have someone who's freakishly lean like that, I might want to put a little whey protein in that product. So I will use a medical-grade whey, dump it into the Gatorade, and that tends to prevent that blood sugar from going up and down and falling like a stone, because you clearly don't want someone half a mile into their race, shaky, weak, diaphoretic, sweating like a son of a gun, based on the fact that their blood sugar is now in the 30s because they couldn't hang on to that glucose. So a lot of it just depends on how close to the race it is in the individual athlete. So I had a girl who was a pentathlete at Rice, and we tried everything to get her something in between her events, and the only thing she could tolerate is red licorice. And so when she made the Olympic trials and the triple jump, she took a picture of her red licorice and texted it to me and said, it still works, because we tried everything else and she was throwing it up. So this is where your job and my job become really fun, because we're not looking at identical twins, and it's taking the science of sports nutrition, taking all of your knowledge and trying to help that individual athlete, not cookie cuttering people. So that's a very astute question, that those freakishly lean individuals tend to not tolerate simple sugars without a crash and burn, in my experience.
Last thing I'm going to want to bring up is a trend. You mentioned leucine.
Yeah.
What are you seeing in this? Because, you know, when I went to school, it was creatine. You got supplement creatine. And then, you know, and then that went away and something else came along. And I'm hearing from an expert that leucine is showing positive results. What are you seeing in that? And what kind of athletes, and what should we know about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And leucine falls into that category. And so here's our new diet trend, the leucine-enhanced diet. It falls into a category of protein called branched-chain amino acids. And there's three, isoleucine, leucine, and valine. And of those three, so a lot of athletes will use branched-chain amino acids in the middle of their workout to maximize strength gains. And leucine appears to be the one that's the rock star. And the best dietary source is milk. And I don't work for the Dairy Council, but that's just the way it is. It's milk, not really yogurt, and not cheese. It is milk. And so what Stu Phillips and Luke Von Loon and some other protein researchers have found is that it really appears to be the anabolic trigger. Leucine, of all the 20 amino acids, appears to be that anabolic trigger, meaning it helps promote muscle protein synthesis and probably just as much prevent muscle protein breakdown. So I think you're going to see a little bit more trend towards leucine and leucine products that are on the market. With very few exceptions, there are not NSF or Informed Choice certified leucine products. You have to get the whole enchilada. You have to get a branch chain product. But look for NSF branch chain amino acids if you're looking for a product to try. I do think, again, when everything else is great, that they're compliant with the athletic trainer, they're busting their tail in the weight room, they're working with me. If there's discretionary money, I might say this might be worth a try. For my inner city kids, I would never do that. I would use fat-free milk. They can get that in the cafeteria. I can write them a note that they need extra cartons of milk, and it becomes a very easy way. The exception is we don't really have a great solution in a school-based environment for kids that are lactose intolerant. There's not a lactose-free milk in most schools, and so I probably would give them something like Dairy Ease or one of the lactase enzymes. That's where I'd spend their money, is to get them to take that before they drink their carton of milk. But to me, it's a food-first philosophy. The challenge is people don't think branched-chain amino acids come from food. They certainly don't think leucine comes from food, because it's a name. It's something that they don't know. They don't know that that's a food.
They think it's a product.
Yeah, they think it's a product, not food.
And they probably announce it as leucine, or they'll call it leucine 500 or something.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah, so you heard it from an expert here that leucine is legitimate stuff. Thank you for your time. Do you have anything you want to add or anything like that?
No, it's just an honor to speak with you, an honor to talk to my favorite groups in the world, strength coaches and athletic trainers. So it was a great experience for me, and thanks for having me.
We're what do you call it, journeymen. We know a little about nutrition, but we get an expert.
Oh, you know, we're teammates.
We're teammates. The athletes come to us first. You mentioned
you got
a lot of times we're the primary care right there, but you know, we need to be smart enough to know when we need the big guns out.
Yep.
So thank you for your time. Great
thank
talk,
you.
By the way.